Hello? Oh, yes, hi. It's Saul. This is Saul Rosenberg, and you're listening to The Callback with Joseph Vesey, a wonderful little podcast. Oh, God, I gotta go. I can't see, damn it. I gotta go. Goodbye.
Hey, everybody. This is part two of me and Romney Malco. If you missed part one, check it out. It's already up. You might know Romney from 40-Year-Old Virgin, Baby Mama, the hit show Weeds, whole bunch of things. I don't got to list his credits. You know who he is. Think Like a Man 2 will be out soon enough. And, man, we had a great time. So I just want to get right into this. I already did the plug for Slam Magazine, so make sure you pick up those two issues, the Iverson issue and the issue that I did with Colin Quinn called Dime Drop. Both are probably online by now, but just in case, you can pick them up on newsstands and Barnes & Nobles anyway. All right? Please rate and review and subscribe to this podcast. It really helps a lot. If you're listening to it, it would be a big help. It'll take you 2 minutes. We really would appreciate it. So special thanks to Romney up front for doing the whole episode. We talked for a long time. Special thanks to Michael Biono, always there recording and producing with me. Let's do this, man. Here we go. Part two, me and Romney Malco. But that's why I was asking that, because I'm in a good relationship now. She's such a good girl, and yeah. I love her so much. I'm just like, okay.
Good.
I'm just so like, let's just keep this. You know.
Well, you know, I mean.
And she's older than me, too.
That's even better. Oh, good shit.
Yeah.
How long y'all been together?
7 months now.
Okay.
And I was like, and she's a comedian, and she's done, like, you know, a lot more stuff than me. So it's cool. It's a different dynamic, and it's like, and she's black. Mm-hmm. So there okay. You go.
Well, you know, all I'm saying is sometimes when you date...
I like that to be a dick. Black. No, I know. She is black. I just said it like...
Oh, I missed it.
She's black.
Okay.
Saying stupid. But, yeah.
You know, sometimes when a woman's that much older than you, she didn't really want much from you.
Didn't want much from me? Like, what do you mean? Like, something serious?
No, just meaning you just have a few things that she needs you to do consistently.
No.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because she looks at you as, you know, being a younger guy... And, you know...
Well, she initially was like, I first started, like, you know, we were friends for a while. I started rapping to her or whatever. She was like, no, you're too young for me. You're too young for me. He's like, I was just like, you kind of just hitting her up, whatever. And then eventually just kind of wore it down. She's like, all right, fuck it. Right. And then it just got more serious and more serious. I was like,
good.
Oh.
Good. She's taking you seriously. That's good.
Well, it's funny. De Niro said that in some interview recently. He said, I'm just a lucky guy. Yeah. And the interviewer was like, well, probably a little bit more than luck. You know, with all the work that you put in. Well, he said then, you put it so great, he put, I think I wrote it down here, because I know you were talking about De Niro, how kind of much they prepare. He said, I was lucky to have the career I had. He said, lucky to have the, what was that, Jamaican?
Unknown number, can't pick it up if it's a private caller. Sorry, you were saying.
No, I was saying, he said, I'm lucky enough to have the drive to work. He said, you're always lucky.
That's
you know, because I remember you were talking about how Klein, all those guys were, they knew their lines. They're ready to go off camera and do the lines with you. So you're basically saying, so all the people, it kind of really puts it in perspective all the people who don't want to do stuff or are kind of a little arrogant or, you know.
Okay, I just wish you could just edit out the whole thing about Afghanistan. I just wish you could because I just know it's going to come back to bite me in the ass, but. Here's what I will say about what you're talking about is that, you know, you can do a certain amount of work in this industry, and I'm going to say that I am guilty of it. I have to stop and evaluate my career and be like, damn, what else do I have to do? You know what I mean? Like, why am I still being offered the role of the black best friend, the black sidekick? I mean, damn. I mean, no, for real. I'm like, I feel like if I haven't proven myself by now, maybe it's just not going to happen and I may just get used to it. But when I really stopped and evaluated myself, the truth of the matter was, and this is, I don't know if any actor will ever admit this, to achieve what I am aspiring to, I hadn't put in enough work. I have not done the work. I'm doing it now, but to achieve or retain what I'm aspiring to takes a lot more work than I've put in. So even when I sat there and took on this victim's mentality of, oh man, I feel like, damn, I've done this. I've worked with all these people. Steve Martin, Michael Douglas, Kevin Klein, Robert De Niro, you know, the Seth Rogens of the world, Judd Apatow, you know, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Kate Hudson. I'm like, even in the indie world, I've worked with Steve Buscemi. I mean, damn it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
Paul Rudd, Chateau.
Paul Rudd and the Chateau. I'm like, well, I mean, who else's resume looks like that? And
Will so Ferrell.
I work with Will Ferrell, John Heder. I love, anyway, Amy Poehler's husband. He's funny as hell, dude.
Yeah.
You know, but it was like, I was like, what else do I have to do? I was being a victim. I was developing this sense of entitlement. Really and truly, what I'm aspiring to, which is owning shit, I hadn't done the work. So about a year and a half ago, we fixed that problem. You know, but yeah, but it hit me. It was like, oh wow. Yeah, I was like, oh wow, I really haven't. But what, yeah, and what I'm aspiring to is very unique. It's not, I don't think there's an actor that I know of that's doing what I'm working toward. And so, you know, like you said, like De Niro said, you know, you're lucky to be willing to work or to be able to work. Yeah. Or to want to work. And so...
But I just like how you also put that lucky thing in, because people that's not walk around like, man, I got so much talent. But he does kind of put that in perspective where it's like, no, but you're still lucky, and he still seems like he's appreciative to be where he is.
Yeah.
Even though he's as talented as he is.
No, that's real talk.
To just get in the position and opportunity. Some people just don't get the opportunity, or you know, they just come from a whatever background,
right,
or something like that.
Yeah. There's all kinds of ways to get in your way, and there's all kinds of ways to just completely be incredibly talented and not seen.
Right. And I'm not talking about the people that just complain that they're not getting discovered. I'm talking about someone who maybe is coming from the worst type of poverty and ends up, you know, in the Marines because they thought that was the only option for them. You know, stuff like that. Like, I think De Niro was just happy that he was able to work or have the ambition that he has.
No, he's right. I mean, just like he said, just, you know, there's all kinds of luck involved. I don't know, man, if I could really... I don't know. I have the weirdest career of anyone I know. I've never seen anything like it, and there's no way, nothing I can attribute it to other than luck, because the first job I booked in my life was a Tim Robbins play. And you know what I did? I left and went to Italy. Me and my girl went to Italy. And I got a call from my agent saying, congratulations, blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, I better call her back. Hey. So she's like, yeah, congratulations, you booked this. I can't believe it. As soon as I send you out, you're already a star, blah, blah, blah.
But you're also not very desperate, too. And I think that helps a lot of ways. People don't like desperate. And you're very, like, content and not anxious.
That's true. But she was pissed off to find out that I was in Italy and wasn't doing
it. I'm sure. But I'm saying just your personality of getting stuff, you know what I mean? Like, you're not, like, trying to do 20 movies a year. So I think, like you said, the more less you do sometimes, the more they want you.
Yeah. You know, who knows? I used to think that there was a rhyme and reason to all these things, but I do believe that there's some luck, and really and truly, it's simple as this. You're standing at the roulette table. Acting for me at this space point is I'm standing at the roulette table, and I'm like, how much do I want to insure my bet? Am I going to put chips on 20 numbers, or am I going to put chips on one number, or am I going to put chips on 5 numbers? That's all it is. It's a risk. If you're not taking risk, you're not even alive. If there's no risk in your day-to-day, you're not alive. So, and to be quite frank, you know, I feel like I've played it pretty damn safe, you know, and where I've gambled is I will usually always choose life over work. Because like I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to be like these guys, but a lot of the men in my family have died young. Yeah. And so I'm like, I'm going to have a good time while I'm alive. You know what I mean? I'm going to date the finest women I can get my hands on. And I'm going to treat them as good as I can until it burns out or until it lasts forever or whatever. And I'm going to go and see.
I love how you said treat them as good as you can. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's open for interpretation.
Yeah. Hey.
of what extent you're going to go to.
Exactly. I mean, it's as good as I can. Not as good as you can.
Right. It's good.
You know what I'm
not as good as they think you should.
Oh, yeah.
But as good as you.
As good as I can. That's all you can do.
Before
like
you get tired.
I'm going to change. I ain't changing. Man, when my dad died, I had a divorce shortly after my dad died, and I was like, you know what? This whole shit about change is fake. I ain't changing shit. Change is a waste of time. Like, you know, all these concessions that I would make for people and trying to, you know, I was like, I realized it was just a waste of time. It made me realize that in that moment, I was like, I am willing to give up all that I have for peace of mind. You lose your dad, you go through a divorce, you're completely exposed and vulnerable.
So you're saying you just be yourself and just either the person's gonna accept you or not?
Well, just really just make yourself happy. I go after love. Like if I'm in love with a woman, it's selfish. If I'm with a woman, more than likely she's my dream girl, period. And I'm riding that till the wheels fall off. You know what I mean? Best way I know how. So do I get joy out of giving and making someone happy and being loved back? Hell yes. Do I like, you know, maintaining, you know, integrity and being a man of my word? Yes. And engaging you in a way that's unique and makes you feel like you're heard and appreciated? Hell yes. But I'm doing all of that shit because I want you. That's it. And the minute that I don't want you, all of that stops. That's the truth. And we can sit here and fake and pretend and whatever else, but that's it. I can do the best that I can do. And when it really, really boils down to it, whether we want to admit it or not, love is a fucking, you know what I'm saying? Love is you talk about subject to interpretation. Love, according to the environment that people come from or the stories that they lead themselves to believe, whatever type of way they choose to interpret their existence, it completely imposes upon the way in which they interpret love. You know what I'm saying? So people ask me, I'm like, I don't know what love is, but I want to do everything that I can for you. You know what I mean? I love, like, if I could say that there is an innate unconditional love, I have that for people. So even though I'm sitting here biting my tongue when we talk about politics and we talk about Afghanistan, I'm biting my tongue, but you can hear my anger in my love and my passion for people and fairness and the issues that I have with injustice. You can hear it. You can feel it. That was the one moment on this podcast, no matter how much you play it over, that mood, which I don't even have to go back and check, is going to be undeniable. But I can't even really speak my mind because, you know.
Are you the type, will you put yourself out there with a girl right away? Or are you sometimes worried about that if you put yourself all
after
the way
my
out
marriage,
there that you'll be taken advantage of or under?
After my marriage, never again.
Never again what?
I will never, ever, ever be public about who I'm with.
No, I don't mean public. I'm saying to the girl. Putting yourself out there in terms of like telling them how much you love them to the point where sometimes get taken advantage of because then they know they kind of got the power.
When I do, when I do feel that way, I tell them. I mean, what power? No, seriously, what power? Please tell me.
No, what I'm saying is, so let's say you're really in love with a girl, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say now you let them know that of how much you're in love. Now, they could be equally in love with you, of course. But what I'm saying is, some girls, they might take advantage of that. Now they know, okay, I got him. He's really in love. So they might take advantage of that. So what I'm saying to you is, are you ever afraid to put yourself out there to that extent?
Well,
some guys might hold it back. They might be really in love with the girl, but they're not going to tell them as much or profess it as much as certain people.
Oh, so you're basically asking me, in so many words, you're asking me, do I love with fear? And the answer is no. The answer is no, I don't love with fear. So it's like, look, first of all, me telling a woman I love her and me being taken advantage of is two completely different things. It really is.
Right.
Baby, I love you. I want to do whatever I can to make you happy. And you being, and her in return being unreasonable or taking advantage of me, two completely different things. I don't say I love you, please, so you can take advantage of me. No, I say I love you.
Right, no, I know that, but sometimes girls will do that though.
Hey, but
that's what I'm saying.
Right, and I'm one of them niggas who doesn't like to be taken advantage of.
Right, so you'll just check them and
that's another issue. If I allow myself to be taken advantage of, I'm like, well, hold up, time out. Is that my issue? Or her issue. It sounds like my issue because I allowed it to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So like, I'll give you an example. When my dad passed, one of the blessings I had was the last 6 years of my dad's life, he moved as far away as he possibly could and I tracked him down three, four times a year, kicked it with him, tough, told him I loved him, wrestled him. You know what I'm saying? I gave my dad a hard time. Like, he had to deal with this. My dad was not like super affectionate and he had to deal with me being uber affectionate with him. And I honestly believe that had he died without me doing that, I'd be hurting to this day. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm in love with a girl, if that girl's going to, you know, drop dead or have some weird twist of fate. Mm-hmm. I want her to know that I want her to be, at least I want the people that I love to know that I love them.
No, I agree with that. I'm the same way. But I'm saying I've had a girl tell me that saying you have to be careful with who, you know what I mean?
No, because I mean, in my opinion, it's like, here's the deal. If you tell someone you love them and they interpret it as an opportunity to take advantage of you, it's up to you to determine your mark. You know, you set boundaries for what you're willing to take and not willing to take. And if you're allowing yourself to be walked all over, you're allowing yourself to be, you know, used or whatever, that really what that is that's a reflection of a deeper issue. Yeah. It has nothing to do with whether or not you told someone you love them, because you can be taken advantage of without saying anything. In fact, I see dudes taking women. You know, I like to go to nice restaurants. I see dudes sitting across from women all the time.
Well, he said that like some people don't like to go to nice restaurants.
No, no, no.
You know, like I personally don't like to go to Burger King every night.
No, no, no. No, what I really said it is like I'm a fucking food snob.
Yeah, well, you should be.
And as a food snob.
Everyone should be.
I'll be in these fucking restaurants where I know you're going to spend $1,200. You know, if you don't get wine, you're going to spend $1,200 on dinner. And the dude is sitting across from a chick and she's on a cell phone. She's on the freaking, she's tweeting and texting. They don't have no words. I'm sitting there going, man.
So what do you make of that?
That's being taken advantage of.
So now what would you do in that situation? Would you get up and goodbye?
In a situation like that, well, first of all, you get tested. You know, you get tested, you probably get tested at one of these more casual $40 plate restaurants.
Yeah.
You have to work your way up. You got to work your way up to that. You know, and the reason I was there, because I was with someone who's been, cool. I've been with for a minute and has the proper etiquette. But, nigga, we subject ourselves to the bullshit because the truth of the matter is we're conditioned. We don't know no better. We got self-esteem issues, so we going to do whatever we got to do just to be in the company of a beautiful woman. A lot of times, she might be beautiful on the outside, but the pussy stank. You know, nigga, nobody knows. I'm saying, it's like these motherfuckers, I laugh at people all the time about this shit. Dude, if I want a woman to marry me, you know who I want her to talk to? My ex-wife. Talk to my ex-wife. Talk to my ex-in-laws. One of my biggest support systems to this day. Talk to them. I could be going through anything. I could get on the phone and talk to that family, and they help me put things in perspective. Because I make sure that my investment is what I'm working on. What you do, you do. So a dude come up to me, a woman came up to me. Me and my girl were sitting out front the other night. It was like 2:00 in the morning. And she comes and she's giving me this whole story about, you know, I had to come out here because I had to pick up my kids and the car that was supposed to bring my kids broke down. And now I'm in my car, but I ran out of gas and I'm at the gas station. I need this, I need that. I was like, baby, stop. Stop. What do you need? Just tell me what you need. She goes, let me just finish what I'm saying. I was like, no, you don't have to finish what you're saying. What do you need? And she was like, I just need to get back to New Jersey. And in order to do that, I need some money for gas. Do you have, you know, and I gave, so I don't know what I had. I gave her what I had in my pocket. It might've been like $50. And she was like, thank you. And so my girl was like, are you ever concerned that it's a scam? And I'm like, no, I did my good deed. This is my karma. What she does with it is her karma. I don't care what other people are doing. And one thing, that's what entertainment taught me. Entertainment taught me that I can't be there for everybody. I can't worry about what other people are doing. Because believe me, I tried to be. Like my boy Ernie used to say, you can't fuck every woman, Ron. Believe me, I've tried. And like I say, you can't please everybody. Believe me, I've tried. And so, you know, that's the thing is we are so, this country that's so built on Christianity and everything else, it's so weird. You're such big friggin' Christians, but we are so set on man-imposed law. I'm like, which is it? Is it Jesus or is it man?
Everyone always asks the generic question, oh, what's it like working with De Niro, whatever. But we even spoken about this off the podcast, how one time you got kind of, not intimidated, but maybe lost in De Niro's eyes.
He just was like, just bang. You turned around, looked at De Niro in the eyes like, oh, shoot. Are we shooting? It looks so natural. It was crazy. Like, are we rolling?
Yeah.
Oh, is this a rehearsal? Like, what? He just looks so natural. It's crazy.
Plus, you're like, you know, you're from a totally different generation. You're working with Robert De Niro. Like, there's nothing more really legendary than that, is there?
No, man.
Didn't that even, yourself, you had to be like, whoa, this is crazy, right?
I was like, I can't wait to watch them work, you know? I can't wait to watch him work. I can't wait to watch Kevin Kline. Like, I'm a real, like, I really appreciate Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't wait to see what that was like. And
what'd you do? Can you give some story that something you and De Niro, an interaction with you and him, either off camera or just something? Something maybe people would be surprised at. Because he's kind of a quiet guy, doesn't grant a lot of interviews.
You know, he asked me for a picture.
A picture? Like, he has to take a picture with you.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he was like, really, And then another time, no, then the first time he did it was when we went to dinner. It was weird. It was like, he was really humble. And one of my favorite, okay, so there was a moment where he was like, hey, Romney, he got up and came up to me. He goes, I came to work one day. He goes, Romney, you do good work, man. It was one day he did that. That was cool. It felt great. But there's a moment where we were in the casino sitting. We were in the casino and... I'm sitting there reading something in Video Village, and I'm there for a while. And I look up and I realize I see every actor, but I don't see Robert De Niro. And I look up and I look around, because then I don't see him. And I look to my left, and he's in one of those, you know, those little partitions you see in like the Chinese stores? They're like a little white partition. They're black lacquer with the white. They had one set up in almost like a square, a half square, so that he could sit and hide behind it. And he was sitting there eating cheese sticks. And I was like, you've been there the whole time? He cracked the hell up. It was like, he'd been sitting next to me the whole time, but because of this partition, I didn't even know. I don't know why we laugh so hard about that shit.
Yeah, just because it's Robert De Niro.
Yeah, man. Something was just strange about that.
But you're right, he is oddly humble.
Yeah.
I got that from that interview that he said where he's a lucky guy. He seems humble.
Yeah, yeah. You interviewed him?
No, I'm saying, oh my God. No, it was some rare interview that I think he just gave on, I don't know what show it was, but I think for that Stallone movie he's got coming out.
Yeah, yeah. Him, Kevin Hart, that's going to, yeah. Wait a minute, does that come out this weekend?
I don't know. It might be.
Oh, it comes out for Christmas.
Okay, it might be. Right.
Okay.
But yeah, I know. I would love to interview someone like him. Because you know what I noticed when people do interview him, if you've seen any of his past interviews, you got to know what not to ask because there's stuff that he just doesn't like talking about. He doesn't really like talking about the process. He doesn't really like talk. He's uncomfortable about if you're going to, you know, call, you know, say he's great. You know, I don't know where the conversation have to go to, but it have to be away from that, I would think. He doesn't really.
Yeah, we had a good conversation about Brooklyn Heights.
There's even more stuff like that. I think that's what he's going to, he wants to be more regular, right?
He's a real dude. He's a real dude.
It's no bullshit.
Yeah. To be quite frank, like talking about acting can be kind of boring. You know, people come up to you and this obviously all they have in common with you is acting and they want to talk to you about acting. It's like...
Yeah. You know. So what's new for Tijuana Jackson? What's the next thing? Could it be a movie? Could it be a short? Is there going to be anything expanded besides YouTube?
One-man show.
One-man show, right. You talked about that.
We got a one-man show for TJ.
Would you be putting that like on a, like hope to get that to like in a theater type of environment?
Yeah, the goal would be to get it in a theater. It's pretty outrageous, but I'm going to just do like, I'm going to do it around town for a while. Try to get it nice and tight. Make it as funny as I can. I've got like an hour and change written. And just do it in 10-minute segments.
Well, please let me know if you ever want to work out around New York.
I will, dude.
That would be so awesome.
I will. And I mean, it's...
We could set up a whole show doing it. You know what I mean? It would be freaking awesome.
And he's got an album.
Music?
Yeah, music. Prison Logic Volume 1. He wrote a book. Prison Logic Volume 1. What else?
He has trouble thinking of different titles for music or books. He has the same title.
Well, no, it's like he's branding. TJ is serious about his branding, and the book is like a workbook. The music is going to be I do TJ because I want people to just experience a different perspective, and I make everything free anyway. I mean, I do that intentionally. That's my charity.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's doing a bunch more stuff for his charity. His website's about to launch. We're trying to write a film for TJ. And that's everything. And it's nice to finally be at a place where if you say, I want to do this, people are like, let's help you do it. You know what I mean?
See, that was what makes it real. I like how you really refer to him as a real person. Yeah. That's probably why you do the character so well.
Thanks, man.
Because that's important. When I had, like, you remember the Jerky Boys?
Yes.
Remember them?
Yes.
Because I had Johnny Brennan, who's, the creator of most of the characters, like Sol Rosenberg, Frank Wizzo, all these characters.
Yeah.
And I always asked him, I said, how do you keep a straight face? How did you not laugh during the phone calls? He said, well, because it was real to me. These characters were real to me.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. I mean,
are you a fan of the Jerky Boys? I always like to plug them because I feel like he's underrated in all the stuff that they've done.
I mean, dude, me and my boys used to call each other to hear. You just listen to this conversation right here. on the over the phone because it was so ridiculous. Now, these are the dudes that were doing all the prank calls and stuff, right?
They're the ones who basically invented doing characters and prank phone call. Whoever invented a prank call, but these weren't the guys. They didn't call up and say, hey, fuck you, and hang up the phone.
No.
They were creating characters and backgrounds and depth. So, they were the first ones to do it, the first ones to sell millions of records. They're the originators of that.
No doubt. And the shit was funny as hell. And it is funny as hell. So, no. Me and my boy Tony, the dude that just called me a minute ago, I've been knowing this dude for like 20-something years, he would call me and play stuff over the phone. Mm-hmm. That shit is funny.
And so you got, the Chris Rock movie will be coming out. Anything you want to plug? Obviously, you finished filming Think Like a Man 2, right? That's in the can.
Right. The only thing I think I want to plug is, if you've listened this far, is...
You can also put it in the beginning if you want, but I think if people are interested, they're going to hear the whole thing.
Just follow me on Instagram, Romany Malco. Follow me on Twitter or Facebook. It's all Romany Malco. I'll tell you what's coming out, when it's coming out, because I don't have definite dates. The only definite date that I do have so far is Think Like a Man 2, which comes out on the 20th of June. That's the only definite date I have. I don't know when the Chris Rock movie comes out, which I think is called Finally Famous.
I think they're still changing that title.
They're going to be changing. That was the working title.
That was the working title.
That's why I can't really,
And but I hear the cuts are good, so I think that's going to be great. You were awesome in it. It was a pleasure to be on set when you were there.
I didn't know. I never know.
You never know.
You never know.
I mean, that's not what they were all, not what the rest of the crew were saying, but I was saying you were good.
Okay, yeah. It's true though. Like, I never friggin' know. Like, people are like, oh, you were really good in that. You don't know. Because once again, if you you're in there, you're worried about so much stuff. You're trying to be in the moment. You're trying to make it real to you. It's hard to be objective.
I know.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. Follow you on.
Sweet.
And Tijuana Jackson, doesn't he have his own?
Tijuana Jackson, just go to TijuanaJackson.com. I promise you, if you go there, you'll hear some real opinions on Syria. You'll hear some really good insight on relationships. You'll hear some really good insight on just living now. And, you know, you'll hear some insight on, like, having a productive existence. But you got to go there.
Tijuana Jackson loves hoes, right?
Tijuana Jackson loves what?
Hoes.
You know, TJ didn't really call them hoes, but he does.
Is there any way we could get Tijuana Jackson to answer that question for 1 second?
Yeah, wait, so what do you mean? Dude, does he love hoes?
Yeah.
I got to get my, let me see.
What now?
Tijuana. Relationship questions. You're dating a girl. You find out she's a hoe. But it's a serious relationship. Do you accept that?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting contradiction because, like I always say, a man, you know what I'm saying? Men, they won't wife a hoe. A man won't even be seen in public with a hoe, but a man will ruin his family for a hoe. And what defines a hoe? What? Because of the fact that she's more out in the open with hers? Because believe me, everybody in America is fighting to be middle class. Every motherfucker you look at is trying to be middle class. But you know what middle class is? Middle class just means to appear as if you are making it in America. You ain't really making it. What middle class make? $36,000 to $57,000 a year, according to where you are geographically. You think that's really enough to get by in America when you got to send kids to school? You got to drive vehicles. Okay, so you're gonna look down on a woman because of the fact that it's out, that her vagina out, just because another chick can make it appear that her vagina has not been as out, don't mean nothing. You get to hitting it. It's like throwing a broomstick down the back of a fucking pickup truck.
No, so you're saying every girl is a hoe, potentially.
No, I'm not saying every girl's a hoe. I'm saying that men create these labels to feel more secure about their own shit. Okay? So how is it that you can go fuck 4 or 5 females, you know what I'm saying, in a week? When you do it, or you a stud and she go do what she a hoe. Let me ask you this. What if she's a strong, independent woman that knows what she want and ain't got time for games? So she go for what she want. And maybe when she meet the dude that's worthy of her time, she gives him that time. Okay? How about that? So who's really the hoe? Okay? Because look, man. In this life, you got two choices, nigga. You're going to either go for it or you're going to hold for it, okay? And I'm going for mine, and I ain't going to be mad at no female that's going for us. Heard me?
What's your best advice for staying out of prison?
My best advice, first of all, we in prison, nigga. This is America, okay? And public school ain't shit but preparation for prison, okay? So my advice for staying out of prison, the first thing you got to understand is don't be black.
That's the first piece of advice I'm going to give anybody who's trying to stay out of prison. The next piece of advice that I'm going to give you for staying out of prison is, y'all going to think I'm being biased about this shit, but I'm serious. You know what I'm saying? You got to learn how to succeed illegally and make it legal. Okay? That's what all these white folks do. Now, I'm not mad at these white folks for doing it, but we got to learn that game. We got to learn the way to succeed in America illegally, because you can't succeed in America unless you succeed illegally. It don't matter what the motherfuckers say. Oh, this is a great big company. Yeah, that company got a bunch of slaves making their fucking sneakers. I don't give a fuck what you say. Heard me? So you want to stay out of prison, you got to learn the legal game. It's called the white collar game. And what you also got to do is you got to make sure you got a bunch of white boys with you. This way, if you go down, they all go down. And trust me, if you got 4 or 5 white boys shackled to your ass, you ain't going down. Real nigga shit.
Word up. Jeez. That's intense.
It's not intense. Niggas, it's the facts. It's the simple facts. See, niggas, what niggas want you to do is, niggas want you to sugarcoat shit, nigga, but is there anything on my fucking body to say Disney? I ain't got Ned tat. You see Disney on me? I ain't got to water down nothing. I don't need no fucking sponsors. Matter of fact, fuck sponsors. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna sit here and jump around and with no spray tan. You know what I'm saying? Tell you to join my cult like Tony Robbins, and I damn sure ain't gonna fake no accent like Eckhart Tolle just to get on Oprah. Matter of fact, fuck Oprah. Her shit canceled anyway.
Well, I appreciate you even coming down here and talking to me about anything.
Real nigga shit, heard me?
Do you like white people, though?
Nigga, what kind of question is that? What kind of question is that?
I don't know.
Do I like white people?
Do you like white people? Do you prefer them not in your home?
Listen, this is my situation, okay? It's not just white people. It's people. It's the individual, okay? I don't choose people by race. I understand that the white nature may be different, say, from the African nature or the Asian nature or the Middle Eastern nature. Everybody's got their nature, you know what I'm saying? Look, you can look at black men, and it's clear that African Americans, particularly, are very visceral people. They're able to feel and engage on a very visceral level, you know what I'm saying? And it's clear that white men destroy everything they put their hands on. So I don't hate nobody. Heard me? You know what I'm saying? It's just I deal with them on individuals. When I need to destroy some shit, I call my white boys.
Destroy what? Like someone's house?
Real nigga shit. No, like you want to destroy your community. You want to destroy an entire population of indigenous people. I know the white boys you call for that. You know what I'm saying? We call it like a displacement program. Real nigga shit. Okay?
Do you still think OJ didn't do it?
Do I still think? See, this thing with OJ, because everybody know me and OJ cousins, we used to fuck some of the same white girls. But just real talk, the thing about OJ is, it's not a matter of whether or not OJ did it, okay? I think that, I honestly, in the initial game, I didn't know if OJ had did it or not. I wasn't sure, you know what I'm saying? But I do know this, okay? I know for a simple fact that there was something fucking with this nigga conscience, otherwise he wouldn't have put himself in jail. Real nigga shit. I think his conscience was fucking with him. And you got to know, OJ got a little thug in him. You know what I'm saying? He will fuck some of these dudes in their ass. You know what I'm saying? He got a little thug in him. And so when a person shows you that much, it exists in all of us. Everybody's got this dichotomy where they can be evil and they can be really good. But you know what I'm saying? When you put it on blast, when you put yourself on blast like that, nigga, especially if you're a black man, you know what I'm saying? The nigga guilty out the go. The minute the nigga caught the football, he was guilty. The minute he started dating white gals, okay, he was on death row. He just didn't know he was. You know what I'm saying? The fact that the nigga's still alive is what's really amazing. So whether or not OJ did it is irrelevant. He thinks he did, and that's why his ass is in jail right now. Real nigga shit.
You're an inspiration.
I've always been. You ain't gonna tell me that.
You know cigarettes are bad for you, right?
Excuse me?
I said you know cigarettes are bad for you, right?
Yep. That's what they say.
I just want to make sure you keep living and delivering your message.
Well, you know, here's the thing, okay? Cigarettes are bad for you. It's everybody's got their vice. You know what I'm saying? You like to fuck all the black women, right? Everybody's got their vice. You know what I'm saying? I just happen to have mine. I'm not going to sit here and defend cigarettes. Hey, Phil, you know what I'm saying? Fuck Philip Morris. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a sponsor for Philip Morris. But the thing is, we all have something that's going to take us to our grave. Mine just happens to be long and slim and white.
What do you want? And thanks for sitting with me. I appreciate you coming on this podcast.
Well, don't run off, nigga. You're just getting real. Real nigga shit. Army.
So that's this week's episode. Special thanks again to Romani. Special thanks again to my sound engineer and co-producer, Michael Biono, the one and only Brooklyn College stand up. All right. Rate and review. Subscribe to the podcast. Follow me on Twitter. Add me on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram. Leave a comment in a porno about me or something like that. How great would that be? you're watching a porno, you go to read the comments, and it says, hey, Joseph Vessi's funny. And it's like, wait, that has nothing to do with it. But hey, you just came. So now that you just came, you go and watch some comedy, you zone out a little bit. So that's what you do. I'm a great person to watch or listen. This is a great podcast either to listen to, or you can look up some sketches that I've done or some stand-up online right after you've jizzed. I'm perfect for that, okay? And you've jizzed. Your day's done. Watch me, all right? That's this week's episode, guys. Thanks for listening.
Hey, what's up there, Charlie? This is Frank Rizzo, R-I-Z-Z-O. Open your fucking ears, jackass. You'll listen to the Callback Podcast with Joseph Vessi, little snot-nosed motherfucker. Listen, you keep listening or I got a fucking shoe waiting for your ass, motherfucker. All right there, Chief. See you later, people.